As I said, over the weekend, Governor Inslee went to Yakima County, eastern Washington, to see a cracked hillside that is moving and threatens to collapse. That would possibly close Interstate 82, could dam up the Yakima River, could wipe out a small community of people living below the ridge. It's called Rattlesnake Ridge, and dozens of people have evacuated in case the hillside falls their way. Except it might not. Probably not, but everybody's waiting and wondering what to do next. Also watching this is my next guest, University of Washington geology professor David Montgomery. Welcome back, David.
Hey, thank you, Bill. It's a pleasure to be here.
How soon could this landslide happen?
Boy, well, the geologists with the state who've been looking at it, as I understand, have predicted that it could happen any time from this coming weekend to the end of February. And it's already a landslide, so it's already moving.
Mm.
The question is, how long will it move? How large will it grow to? And how far will it get? And equally important, which direction will it be moving in?
Because yes.
At present, it seems to be moving to the south primarily, which is towards the quarry at the that was dug at the base of the hill.
That would be good.
That's the best case scenario, would be if the area that they had that they're monitoring that's moving at present simply continues moving in the direction that it's going, because it's not moving towards the highway, it's moving down towards the quarry.
Mm-hmm.
The worst case scenario is if the cracks enlarge, a larger piece of the terrain gets engaged, and it shifts and moves more to the west. And that would have a much more higher likelihood of impacting the highway. And if it's large enough and traveled far enough, conceivably even damming the river. But that's sort of the low probability, worst case scenario at this point.
You mentioned a quarry. Can we blame this slide on that rock quarry?
Well, you know, it's a little early, I think, to sort of blame the slide on anything since it's still going on and people are focused on what's it going to do next. But if you look at the possible causes for a slide in this circumstance.
But you said the slide's already happening.
Oh, yeah, the slide's already happening.
Yeah.
And if you look for the possible causes of, well, what might have triggered it, there's not a long list of possible things. You know, you can look to rainfall, you can look to an earthquake, you can look to destabilizing the toe of the slope. Two of those don't seem to be applicable in this case.
Toe of the slope, meaning the river eroding away the bottom of the slope.
Or digging a really big quarry at the base of the slope as well. So when you remove a lot of rock from the base of a slope, you debuttress the toe of the slope. And in this particular case, one of the things that makes it pretty different from the tragic Oso landslide from a few years ago is the nature of the material in the hillside is completely different. These are stacked basalt flows that are tipped or dipping to the south, sort of into the quarry. And it's my understanding that the state geologists who are monitoring this believe that the slide is detaching on layers in between the lava flows. And if you think about a hill made of basalt, that sounds like hard rock, right? I mean, it sounds like something you wouldn't expect to, you'd expect it to be fairly stable.
Mm-hmm.
But the layers of weak silt interbeds in between those lava flows provide natural avenues for slippage, for essentially a failure. And so if you think about the strength of a hillside at the scale of the hillside, rather than a small piece of rock you might hold in your hand, that same basalt may not be very strong. If you're dealing with all the irregularities and the zones of weakness, it's the sort of weakest layers in the slope that will define the stability of the whole slope.
You mentioned the landslide in Oso. Obviously, that's what we're thinking about. On the west side, this happened in Snohomish County a few years ago, 43 people killed. You talked about physically about how this slide compares, but what else? What are the similarities and differences between this experience and that terrible one?
Well, you know, another big difference is that people noticed the cracks ahead of time on this one, sort of as they were starting before the sort of ultimate evolution of the slide. So it's been accelerating since October. It's still growing.
We could see that just because it's not a tree-covered hillside. We could see the cracks. Yeah.
Yeah. Apparently, it was a pilot who saw it sort of flying over. And went, wow, that hillside's cracked. You know, and that's one of the great advantages to geologists and geomorphologists about airplanes. So you get a good view of the terrain,
mm-hmm.
and it's even better if there aren't trees on it. Trees can mask an awful lot of very telling surficial geologic evidence. So, in this case, it seems like the state was made aware of it very early in the failure process. But it's also a very different kind of landslide. Given that it's a basalt hill rather than a weak pile of glacial debris like in Oso, you shouldn't expect the evolution of the slide to be parallel. They're very different beasts. The Oso slide triggered really rapidly, liquefied, traveled a long distance. This one's been moving slowly now already, as far as we know, for several months. and it's going at a pace of about a foot and a half a week. You know, you compare that with a kilometer and a half in seconds for the Oso landslide, and it's pretty clear these are very different things. That doesn't mean that the current one at Rattlesnake Ridge couldn't travel far or couldn't impact the highway or couldn't dam the river. But what it does mean is that we shouldn't expect it to behave in the same way as the Oso slide. It already hasn't. And the big question at Rattlesnake Ridge in terms of what's going to ultimately happen there is sort of the difference between the best case scenario and the absolute worst case scenario. And that's one of the reasons that the state, I think, has been so on top of monitoring the movement of this one, is that it was noticed early, it's moving slowly. You can actually measure it and gauge it and try and make predictions of when it will ultimately develop into as full-fledged a landslide as they expect.
So why couldn't the state prevent the worst-case scenario by clearing out that neighborhood, setting some explosives in the ridge, and just taking this thing down like avalanche control? Okay, the fact that you're laughing tells me that's probably a terrible idea.
Well, it's every sort of high school guy's dream, right, to do that, you know, blow up a hillside. But think about what may happen. What's happening now is you've got cracks inside that ridge that are developing and connecting and interacting with the different layers in the slope. You throw high explosives at it, you're changing the equation.
Okay.
And you might basically do what you intended, which would be to drop the piece of the slide that is currently moving into the quarry and declare game over. But what if you basically blow a bigger crack open and you change the vector, you change the amount of material that's actually involved? And without even thinking about the potential liability questions, the question of how wise it would be to really, in an uncontrolled way, destabilize a slope like that should be open to question. So that's not my preferred outcome in this case, as spectacular an experiment as that might be.
David, you just told us that this slide could accelerate as early as this weekend, and we don't know exactly what's going to happen. Not everybody is evacuated. What would you tell those people living at the base of Rattlesnake Ridge?
Well, I think in this case, the prudent thing is to evacuate in this case, because the range of outcomes between the hopeful best case scenario and the potentially worst-case scenario, it's a pretty wide range. And I don't think there's anybody who can guarantee what the outcome would be at this point.
This is not an affluent community. This is a hardship to have to evacuate, I would
think. Yeah, this is a really good example of why in emergency response scenarios like this, we need the whole state to pull together to help the people that are at risk. They didn't do anything other than happen to live at a place that someone else's action or acts of God placed them in potentially in harm's way. We should be helping those people through this very difficult time. But the prudent thing is to evacuate, because I think the state made the right call in terms of that warning, because there is the potential that they could be in harm's way. And I think it's the onus is on the rest of us in the state to essentially assist people through that period. We could also, you know, talk about where we allow people to live, where we allow people to dig quarries, you know, the sort of land use and activity thing. But in the middle of an ongoing crisis, that's probably not the right time for that conversation.
Well, here you are, David. You're a geology professor. We all remember the awful Oso slide in Snohomish County. Now we're watching something unfold. Did we learn anything useful from that Oso landslide?
Well, I think one of the things we learned is that transparency and openness in terms of communicating with the public is a good thing, because otherwise people are making assessments and decisions sort of in a vacuum, if you will. More information that's accurate is better, and the public deserves to be able to know things in real time as they're going. And I think the state seems to be doing a much better job at engaging with the public, engaging with the media, getting information out on it. They're being very transparent, and I think that's a wonderful development. I think one of the things that is a long-term takeaway from the Oso tragedy is that the unexpected can happen. And that's where, in this particular case, not simply ruling out the worst-case scenario, but actually planning for it and trying to think of, well, okay, what if it does go sideways relative to the way the experts on site are expecting it to go at this point? So you want to plan for the most likely scenario, because that's, you know, that's good policy to try and figure out what we should do right now. But keeping in mind, what is that worst-case scenario, and trying to make sure that everything is done to keep people and infrastructure out of harm's way.
David Montgomery, geologist, geology professor at University of Washington, talking about this slow happening and impending slide at Rattlesnake Ridge above Interstate 82 in Yakima County. David, thanks a lot.
Hey, no worries. Glad to be here.
State officials and geologists are monitoring the progress of that Rattlesnake Ridge slide. And Governor Jay Inslee, who I mentioned was there over the weekend, is going to be here in our studio on Thursday during the record. What would you like to ask the governor? Send us your question. Right now, you can email record@kuow.org, record@kuow.org. You can call our feedback line, if the phone is better, 206-221-3663, 206-221-3663. And I would love to put your question to the governor of Washington State. He's the boss of the state, but you're his boss. Right back to KUOW's The Record in just a moment. What will these millennials do next? I don't know. Stare at their phones? I heard something about cereal. That was actually a new one to me. Okay, guys, hang on. We're going to get there in just a moment. Stay tuned. It's The Record on KUOW Seattle. I'm Bill Radke.